Welcome to today's deep dive. We are generating an audio overview of a truly mind-bending text for you today.
Yeah, we are. It's an incredibly dense one.
Right. Our mission today is to explore this fascinating 2004 mathematical paper by Boris Cyrulson. It's titled Scaling Limit, Noise, Stability. And if you are the kind of person who works with data or predictive models, you are in exactly the right place.
Absolutely. Because we are looking at what happens when mathematicians zoom out to infinity on random events.
Exactly. We're going to uncover this mathematical phenomenon that is so chaotic, it's fundamentally invisible to standard sensors. It's called black noise.
It really is a remarkable piece of work. I mean, Cyrulson builds on these incredibly rigorous mathematical foundations.
Yeah.
He grounds the whole exploration by assuming all his probability spaces are Lebesgue-Rochlin spaces.
Which guarantees the foundational logic is totally airtight, so we don't have to worry about pathological counterexamples ruining the topology.
Exactly. But the implications of what happens inside those spaces, they completely violate our basic intuition about randomness.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because while the paper is filled with high-level probability theory, you know, things like those Lebesgue-Rochlin spaces we just mentioned, the underlying concepts are actually really beautiful and deeply relevant to how you understand data.
They really are.
So to start, we need to frame the scaling limit. You can think of it loosely like zooming out on a digital photograph.
Right, where you have the discrete pixels.
Exactly. Up close, you see individual pixels. But as you zoom out toward infinity, those independent pixels blur together into a smooth, continuous gradient.
And in probability theory, taking the scaling limit is basically looking at a sequence of independent random variables, like coin flips, and mathematically observing what happens as the number of those variables approaches infinity.
Right, and classical limit theorems usually look at linear functions of those variables, like taking an average.
Yeah, and that generally leads you to classical, smooth mathematical structures, standard Brownian motion or white noise.
Which we are all pretty familiar with.
Right, but what's fascinating here is that Cyrulson mathematically proves that zooming out doesn't always smooth things out.
So this is where he brings in his toy models, right?
Yes, he introduces two distinct theoretical frameworks. I can walk you through the first one. The discrete toy model. Imagine an infinite sequence of independent random signs. Just coin clips, plus one or minus one.
Okay, I am picturing that.
As you take the scaling limit of the sequence, you do arrive at a continuous process with independent increments. But here is the massive paradox he introduces. The limiting process is no longer driven by the original coin flips.
Wait, hold on. Let me make sure I'm following that.
Sure.
The macroscopic picture is built out of those microscopic random events, but the mathematical limit somehow forgets its own driving noise.
Yes.
How is that structurally possible?
That paradox is the entire engine of the paper. The math shows you can't describe the macroscopic limit just by looking at its microscopic independent increments. Cyrulson proves the conditional distribution concentrates on functions of opposite global sign.
Meaning, if you initiate a global sign change, it leaves all the individual microscopic variables invariant.
Exactly. The macroscopic limit has completely detached from its microscopic roots. The independence of the finite model is simply lost.
It vanishes into the limiting procedure.
It totally does.
So he proves this structural detachment with a discrete model. But he also does this with a continuous model, too, right?
He does. He uses a continuous toy model where you have a complex valued stochastic process, basically a Brownian motion on a circle.
Okay.
It's continuous almost everywhere, but it features this highly specific discontinuity at exactly one instant, time equals zero.
And the same paradox happens.
The exact same one. The limiting process becomes independent of the underlying Brownian motion that is ostensibly driving it.
So a completely new reservoir of independence emerges in the limit.
That detachment is the key takeaway. Zooming out to infinity destroys the microscopic independence.
Which naturally brings us to why this happens. Like, why do some systems smooth out beautifully into white noise while others just detach and forget their roots?
And that comes down to symmetry.
Right. Cyrulson divides random models into high symmetry and low symmetry. High symmetry is what standard statistical models are usually built on. Random permutations or random graphs where every edge has the same probability.
Because they are highly symmetric, their finite models are invariant under permutations of their independent variables. So they lead to those classical limits.
You get the Poisson distribution or white noise.
But low symmetry models are where those classical rules just violently break down.
Because you can't just swap the independent random variables around without completely altering the system.
Exactly.
And the paper has this great visual example for low symmetry. The simplest spider walk.
Oh, the spider walk is a brilliant way to visualize this.
If you are listening, imagine a particle starting at the center of a graph. At each step, it randomly chooses one of two outgoing edges.
So it's forming this massive, continuously expanding binary tree of trajectories.
Right. And when you take the scaling limit of that spider walk, zooming out to infinity, it doesn't become standard Brownian motion.
No, the math forces it to become a continuous, complex-valued martingale whose values belong exclusively to the union of three rays. It's called Walsh's Brownian motion.
Let me stop you right there, because we should definitely clarify martingale for the listener in this context.
Oh, yeah, good call. A martingale is essentially a model of a perfectly fair game. Your past knowledge doesn't give you any predictive edge about the future direction.
The conditional expectation of the next value is equal to the present value.
Exactly. So Walsh's Brownian motion is a continuous version of that fair game, but the low symmetry of the microscopic spider walk completely constrains the macroscopic limit.
Instead of diffusing evenly in all directions, it's mathematically locked into navigating those three specific rays meeting at the origin.
Right. Which means if you are looking at a massive data set or a complex system, you might assume the microscopic rules dictate the macroscopic outcome.
But Cyrilson shows that microscopic independence is destroyed, and entirely new macroscopic rules take over.
Completely different rules.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the paper uses this foundation to pivot to the main dichotomy, stability versus sensitivity.
Yeah, this is basically the structural formulation of the butterfly effect for large data sets.
To really grasp that, we need to look at the corruption analogy the paper uses.
Right, imagine you have an incredibly large array of random variables. That's your true data. Now, generate a second array that is an unreliable copy of that true data.
Most of the signs are correct, but a mathematically tiny percentage of them are inverted.
Exactly. You are introducing slight corruption. Or micronoise.
So if slightly corrupting the microscopic data doesn't drastically change the macroscopic function, the system has microstability.
And classical continuous factorizations like standard Brownian motion are completely stable. They absorb that tiny fraction of noise without a structural collapse.
But then you have microsensitivity.
Right. In highly nonlinear low symmetry systems, slightly perturbing the data at the microscopic level cascades upward. It completely changes the outcome.
The macroscopic limit becomes utterly unrecognizable.
The math takes that even further. The text references a theorem by Benjamini, Kalai, and Schramm. It states that if the influence of individual variables vanishes in the limit, the function becomes incredibly sensitive.
Let's ground that. When the theorem says the influence of individual variables vanishes, what does that actually mean for the structure?
It means no single data point holds any dictatorial power over the macroscopic outcome. Their individual influence is practically zero.
But because they exist in a highly nonlinear environment, they are deeply entangled.
Exactly. If no single point matters much on its own, but their nonlinear entanglement is absolute, flipping just a handful of variables causes a massive ripple effect.
The micro perturbation just totally destroys the macro structure.
The scaling limit is entirely unstable.
And exploring that extreme microsensitivity leads us directly into the void. It leads us to the big reveal of Cyrilson's findings. Black noise.
This is what emerges when we push these deeply sensitive nonlinear limits to their absolute mathematical boundary.
How does he mathematically define it in the text?
He defines it strictly by its sub-sigma field. A noise is black if its stable, linear sub-sigma field, which is its first chaos, is totally degenerate. It contains only zero.
Okay, we definitely need to break that down. What does it mean for the first chaos to be totally degenerate?
This goes back to those Fourier-Walsh coefficients we mentioned in the intro. It's a way of decomposing complex functions into a spectrum, kind of like how a Fourier transform decomposes a sound wave.
So the first chaos is the lowest tier of that spectrum.
Right. It's the realm of simple linear combinations. So when he says it's totally degenerate, he means it literally contains only zero.
All the linear combinations amount to absolute nothingness.
The entire system exists fundamentally outside the realm of linear measurement.
So why is it called black noise? What's the contrast with standard white noise?
It's all about detection. White noise has a constant spectral density. It excites harmonic oscillators of all frequencies.
So standard linear sensors easily pick it up.
Exactly. It's loud, it's linear, it's measurable. Black noise is the exact opposite. Because its first payoff is degenerate, it yields a zero response to linear sensors.
It is entirely invisible to them.
Completely invisible.
That is just wild. We have standard sensors sitting there reading zero while this immensely chaotic thing is happening.
The text actually drives this home by quoting the mathematician Schneirelmann discussing fluid dynamics.
Oh, right, the ideal incompressible fluid quote.
Yes, Schneirelmann describes the paradoxical motion of this fluid where there are infinitely fast oscillating forces
They
present.
contain immense kinetic energy.
But smooth test functions aren't sensitive enough to feel them, so they just register as zero. They are functionally indistinguishable from empty space to those sensors.
Okay, to help the listener visualize this invisible void in a mathematical setting, give me a concrete example from the sources. What does black noise actually look like?
The paper details the Brownian web as a black noise, specifically looking at the noise of coalescence.
Let's help you visualize this web. Imagine a one-dimensional line. Now picture an infinite number of particles starting everywhere on that line, all doing random walks.
Vibrating back and forth independently.
But when two paths meet, they merge. They coalesce and travel together.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you can see why this creates chaos for linear sensors. Because of this infinite merging, the microscopic details, like which path join which, become intensely critical but highly entangled.
Because one tiny shift changes who a particle merges with, which changes the trajectory of the merged particle, which changes who that larger particle merges with later.
That cascading entanglement is what drives the macro sensitivity. The paper proves mathematically that linear combinations of these merged paths in the first chaos amount to nothing.
The microscopic variables vanish into the macroscopic structure.
And if you deploy a linear sensor into the Brownian web, trying to average out the movements, you get zero. The noise of coalescence is entirely black.
So what does this all mean? We started off talking about zooming out on a digital Soto, and we've ended up staring into this invisible void of mathematical noise.
It really is a journey.
It proves that zooming out to infinity doesn't always smooth things out. Sometimes it creates a wildly sensitive, non-linear void. And if you think about this in your own life, especially in an age of information overload, we rely heavily on linear sensors.
Summaries, averages, trends.
Exactly. We use those to understand the world. But Cyrilson's math proves that some of the most complex, chaotic forces completely evade those simple measurements.
They are just blind to the true nature of the system.
This raises an important question, though.
Yes, this raises an important question based on a really provocative detail near the end of the text. Cyrilson notes that black noise spectral measures are concentrated on perfect sets, often of Hausdorff dimension 1/2.
Now, Hausdorff dimension measures fractional dimensions. Shapes that are rougher than a standard line but don't quite fill a 2D space.
Right, so if black noise operates at a fractional dimension of 1/2, what if there are different levels of sensitivity corresponding to different fractional dimensions?
Could there be a vast continuum of different shades of black noise?
Think about the complex systems around us, the stock market, weather patterns, massive data sets. Could there be entirely different shades of black noise lurking in there, driving unpredictable macroscopic changes?
And they are completely invisible to our current mathematics, just waiting for the right non-linear sensor to finally hear them.
It's an incredible thing to think about.
It genuinely is. It's a deeply provocative thought to leave you with. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into Cyrilson's paper and the scaling limit. Keep questioning what your sensors are actually telling you, and we will catch you next time.